Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock, a podcast from the Irish Times. Later in the show, I'll be talking to Umber Kennedy of the Irish Times and economist Alan McQuaid about the state's record corporation tax take in the year to date. Is this tax income sustainable into the long term? And what should the government do with these bumper receipts? I'll also be talking to Dermot Jewell of the Consumers Association of Ireland about changes to the rules on gift vouchers following a 25-year campaign. But first, I'm joined in studio by Peter Hamilton for a roundup of some of the major business stories of the week. Peter, you're very welcome. We're going to start with accountancy stroke banking and Sean Fitzpatrick and his disciplinary hearing in front of Chartered Accountants Ireland.
That's right. He was up this week. It had been delayed for some time as the court issues went on. The DPP asked Chartered Accountants Ireland to delay this in 2011. It came back in 2018, and this week we had it. So what happened was Sean Fitzpatrick, the former chairman of Anglo, had his membership of Chartered Accountants Ireland revoked, and he was ordered to pay a fine of €25,000. Now, those two things don't sound terribly serious in themselves. The maximum fine here is €30,000, and the maximum non-financial sentence is exclusion from the institute. So that's what happened to him. They found that he made a series of failures in concealing loans between Anglo and Irish Nationwide Building Society in the lead up to the crash over a 9-year period. He accepted that allegation made against him in respect of temporary loan transfers. That was where he would refinance personal loans with Irish Nationwide at the year end so that they would be hidden from public scrutiny.
So taken off the balance sheet of Anglo at the year end and transferred over to IMBS.
Temporarily, usually for a period of maybe 5 days. So it wouldn't appear
in the annual report, for
indeed.
Example.
Yeah. Yeah, and in 2007 alone, that process amounted to €122 million across three different currencies. So he was quite exposed at that time. We knew this already, of course. But
You were at the hearing.
I was at the hearing, yeah.
Was he there?
He didn't come himself. He was represented by solicitor Michael Staines. Mr. Staines also represented David Drum, people may remember, in his criminal action. But so what happened was that Sean Fitzpatrick had originally offered to pay €20,000, and Michael Staines said that this would have put him to the pin of his collar, that €20,000, that his only asset was his pension. But he noted that €20,000 was due to Sean Fitzpatrick. We don't know where that was from. He didn't elaborate on it. But that fact about it being his only pension, we should note that the Irish Times reported last month that he is seeking permission to build a new four-bed house at the back of his Greystones home.
But it's very curious, isn't it?
It was a peculiar case. It was peculiar. There was more information.
That he and his wife have put in the planning application for this new home in Greystones, and yet we're told, according to the hearing, that he's to the pin of his collar to pay €20,000.
Should be
said, I suppose, his wife owns the house in Greystones. He was a bankrupt, so she took full possession of that. She bought out his interest.
Now, Michael Staines did point out that he is looking after his wife as well with this pension. We don't know the extent of this pension, but one would imagine it's not insubstantial. It wasn't included in the bankruptcy at that time. I think the rules have since changed around bankruptcy.
Yeah. Now, people will wonder why, 11 years on from when Sean Fitzpatrick stood down from Anglo-Irish Bank, it's only now that his membership of Chartered Accountants Ireland is terminated.
So they were asked to postpone it for a period of about 7 years, and in fairness to them, they did that and they were willing to do that. It was only last year when David Drum came up before the Chartered Accountants Ireland Disciplinary Tribunal. So I suppose the delay has still been significant, but there's a period of 7 years where they couldn't do anything anyway. So it's not totally their fault.
Yeah, okay. There's a couple of cases still pending, including EY.
That's right.
Facing a disciplinary hearing from Chartered Accountants Ireland in relation to its audits of Anglo-Irish Bank. We'll see where that goes. Now, Irish whiskey seemed to have escaped the worst of the tariff war that's going on between Donald Trump and the European Union. There's a bit of a retaliation and tit for tat. But a report by Suzanne Lynch, our own Suzanne Lynch in Washington, D.C. this week, suggests that Irish whiskey might now be captured by some tariffs from the US.
That's right. She reported that the United States trade representative warned that the US may introduce new tariffs on whiskey. This issue relates to Airbus and supposed illegal aid given by the European Union, which the WTO found that the EU did give illegal aid to Airbus. So Donald Trump retaliated, and initially we thought that Irish whiskey was in the firing line, but we escaped it because it was Scotch whiskey, and and things like Baileys, and as you said, butter. Butter now in the US, the second...
Irish butter and cheese.
And Kerrygold, for example, the second biggest butter brand in the US, now going to become a lot more expensive as a result of this. But the fact that Irish whiskey is up again is obviously going to be a concern for the industry. It's now in growth mode, very much so. We have a raft of new distilleries here, so this isn't the best time.
I mean, it's by far the biggest market for Irish whiskey, right? And Jameson is the biggest Irish whiskey in town, and it has made great play in the United States over the last, it's poured millions and millions every year into marketing there. So it's a big issue for the industry, isn't it?
Well, it is. I think, you know, the tariffs could be a quarter, 25% of the current price for an industry that, as you say, is in growth mode now. That extra charge could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. It could prevent US consumers from buying Irish whiskey, which is very much a key market. Yeah.
Yes, Irish distillers have in their distillery down in Cork, they have a visitors centre where you can obviously buy the product. And very popular with American visitors who pop along to
see. I've been there myself. It's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. But they told me subsequently that they get a lot of complaints from Americans because they buy their Jameson of whatever hue or colour, Redbreast or whatever it might be, and they take it home. And then they realise that in the local market, they can actually get it a bit cheaper because it's heavily taxed, obviously, here in Ireland. So to buy it at retail level in Ireland is quite expensive to do it in the shop, and so they get a number of complaints, and then they have to write back and tell them, well, sorry about that, but that's just the way we're taxed in Ireland. So anyway, who knows, maybe that 25% tariff might equalise the price between the two.
Should be said that all those new gin distilleries that we've all been talking about for the past few years, all their whiskey is now beginning to come to fruition. You know, they didn't always want to be gin distilleries, they wanted to do the whiskey thing. It's a bad time for them as well. There are plenty of those knocking around, and now that their whiskey is about to be sold on the market, for this to come in, it's a perfect storm.
And our old friends at Drumshambo in County Leitrim just launched their first batch of whiskey last week. Okay, well, we wish them well. Now, let's talk about Google. The co-founders took us slightly by surprise last night by announcing that they were going to step down from their executive roles with the parent company Alphabet.
Yeah, the amongst the richest people in the world, Larry Page and Sergey Brin said that they were stepping down, as you said, as president and CEO of Alphabet. Alphabet, it should be said, is Google's parent company. It controls a number of companies, including a self-driving car business called Waymo and a healthcare software company called Verily. YouTube was under Google's ownership, which was controlled by a man called Sundar Pichai, who controls about 1% of Google. So this was unusual. The two roles, the president role is not being replaced. The CEO role is, and that's Sundar Pichai is taking over that role. They will still remain on as directors of the parent company. And indeed, they control more than 50% of the business through preferred shares. So, look, they're not going anywhere. They're moving on, but they're not really going anywhere. Yeah. Both of them worth in excess of $50 billion as well, it should be said.
Right, okay, they're doing okay. Now, Google has a big footprint in Dublin, and they're set to expand that, according to a report from our very own Ronald Quinlan this week.
That's right. Ronald reported this morning that they have that they're closing in on a deal, a €120 million deal to buy the Treasury building. This will be known to people around the Grand Canal area, one of Johnny Ronan's boomtime assets. This would add to a significant portfolio that Google has here. In 2011, they bought their European headquarters on Barrow Street for €100 million at the time, which was pretty decent price, and the nearby Montevetro building for €99 million. They've subsequently had to shell out considerably more on commercial property. Their Boland's Quay scheme, which people will be familiar with now, the Boland's Mill, that was €300 million just to buy that. And then, so they've plenty of assets here. They're also renting a lot. People will know the Velasco building and also Marlott, Pat Crean's building, the sorting office. They're said to be in talks to rent the entirety of that 2,000 square foot there.
Yeah, Rada suggests they're here for the long term. If you're going to spend that amount of money and put down these kind of roots in a market, it suggests they're here for the long term. We're constantly seem to be fretting that a lot of these big American multinationals might simply up sticks and leave Ireland, and thousands of people lose their jobs, and, you know, lots of suppliers be affected and so on. It's happened in the past in some cases, Dell, of course, left Limerick. But in this case, it would seem to indicate that Google's here for a long time.
These are expensive assets.
Spend that kind of money, yeah.
And I suppose, unlike Facebook, Facebook is renting its offices, and you know that office, that Facebook office in Grand Canal, will also come up quite soon. As you reported last year, Facebook are taking over a large site in Balls Bridge, formerly the AIB Bank Centre. So, you know, there's more space to be gotten for Google in Grand Canal if they want it, and that'll come up quite soon. Their control of Grand Canal, maybe the concentration of one company is a bit concerning, but you know, I think you're probably right there. It doesn't suggest that Google's going anywhere anytime soon. Like, they've also spread it out to East Point, Sandyford. So they are spreading their footprint quite considerably.
Yeah. Okay, Peter, we'll leave it there. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Now, on Tuesday, the government published Exchequer returns for the year to date. Among other things, it showed that corporation tax receipts topped €10 billion, a new record for the first 11 months of a year. It was also €560 million up year on year. And yet we're told that these receipts are not sustainable and are dependent on a small number of big global tech companies based here. Joining me in studio to discuss this issue are Owen Brooke Kennedy of the Irish Times and economist Alan McQuaid. Owen, we might start with you. You might just take us through the headline numbers there on corporation tax.
Yeah, well, it looks like overall another bumper year in tax for the government. The overall figures show they collected €55 billion, and that's €1.4 billion ahead of what they expected. Now, that €1.4 billion excess, if you like, €1.1 of it is coming from corporation tax. And last month alone, which in November, they collected €3 million in one single month, which is a record, an all-time record. So the tide on corporation tax just keeps coming in despite these warnings that we're getting.
€3 billion. Okay, so what's leading to this surge in tax receipts from corporations?
Well, a few years ago, there was a kind of global outcry about multinational tax avoidance. And since then, there's been a lot of onshoring of assets, especially IP assets in the tech sector. And so companies have tried to basically put a lot more assets and their profits together. And we seem to be the benefactors of that. Now, IFAC, the Fiscal Advisory Council, and others are warning that because the base is so concentrated around a small number of companies, 80% of the receipts come from multinationals, but 50% of the receipts come from only a handful of companies. And because it's so concentrated, we could be at risk of a reversal because it's such a small number of companies involved. And then the other big vulnerability is that the OECD are planning to reform the global tax rules, which is going to associate more of the profits with where the sales are. Now, being a small country, we're obviously going to suffer under that reform.
Yeah. Alan, you've been looking at the Exchequer returns for many, many years. These corporation tax numbers, are they mind-boggling in your opinion?
Well, they're certainly a lot higher than what they used to be. And there's no doubt, as Owen points out, I mean, clearly the arrival of a lot of these high-profile multinationals here has been a key factor. I mean, I've always argued, and this is one of the arguments that people question, is, you know, whether Ireland is the 51st state, you know, America, you know, whether these multinationals are here just for the corporation tax, or is it because they are favourably disposed to Ireland because of heritage and because of, you know, that a lot of them have sort of, they may not be first generation Irish, but they may be second or third generation and have relations with Ireland going back. So they'll always look favourably on Ireland. And if you go to the IDA press conferences, the IDA will always argue that there's more to it than just the actual rate of tax that attracts these people in, the level of the workforce, highly skilled, etc., you know.
The language so, and so forth. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's interesting that I think the Department of Finance did their own survey or did their own research on it, and I think on the figures last year, and their conclusions seem to be that most of it, the receipts were accounted for by normal sort of factors, i.e. profitability of these companies. Whereas, as Owen points out, the Fiscal Advisory Council has suggested 60% of these of the take a sort of windfall, and you can't rely on it. And so I think the problem is it's very difficult to know. As I was saying to you before we came on air, that I've been at, and I'm sure we've all been at, a number of these CSO press conferences and the national accounts, when the CSO is very reluctant to give too much away on exactly what's going on. They will cite these sort of multinationals as obviously the key contributor, but they will are reluctant to identify any individual companies, etc. And I remember someone telling me that one of these press conferences, at least, that there was legal representatives of multinationals there to make sure nothing was said that was, you know, that pointed a finger at individual companies. Now, whether the numbers are sustainable, it's hard to know. I think the economy is obviously performing well. We've seen that from other numbers, apart from corporation tax. The employment numbers up the year to date have been very, very strong. The numbers we have in GDP, albeit only for the first half of the year, are very, 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 very strong too. So it does suggest that, you know, the world, the economy has done okay. US is doing okay. It's certainly the best of the main economies. And we clearly, given the numbers from the CSO that have been produced by the CSO, are doing well as too. So on that basis, it's no surprise that, you know, receipts are strong. But in terms of trying to identify how much of it is actually one-off and how much of it is actually sort of sustainable, it's not impossible, really, I'd say.
Yeah. What's the government doing with this unexpected windfall?
Well, that's another issue. I mean, what they are doing, what they should be doing with it. I mean, I think I think a lot of people would say that the government, all governments, not just this government, but governments past have tended to waste money. They just spend it on sort of cover up the holes in the health spending, etc. And it just goes down a black hole, really. And that's obviously a worry. I think clearly we've seen ourselves with the developments in the last couple of days, today as well, in terms of on the political front, a general election is looming. So we know that politicians aren't going to be worried. I mean, corporation tax, it's a huge amount of money for these people. Corporation tax is not going to be an issue on the doorsteps. Oh, we all know that. The big issue is going to be health, housing, clearly. So if you have money that's going to, you can fund some of this sort of worries in these areas, you're going to say, fair enough, you know, you're not even going to go near the income tax area. You're just going to say, look, we have money here from the corporation tax. We'll use that money for the time being to get us through an election to cover up these areas that people are going to be concerned about. And let's face it too, bingo is probably going to play a bigger issue in the general election than corporation tax, given what we've seen and the way bingo players have been treated, you know, because obviously a lot of these people are of the older generation. And I think the figures tend to show that older people have a bigger inclination to vote.
It's very much community based as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Owen, we had a boring budget, really, didn't we, in October? It was supposed to Brexit proof the economy. There weren't too many giveaways. But as Alan says, there is an election looming now. It's just around the corner. We have all of this surplus cash. Would you expect?
I suppose it was a dream for the Minister for Finance to have that sort of budget where he could justifiably sit on his hands and deflect all calls on the public purse with the Brexit risk. And of course, he managed to kind of sidle through a lot of the demands for extra funds on the public purse. So it's hard to know. It's really hard to judge the risk that's facing the Exchequer from corporate tax. But I mean, the revenues that they're generating are just huge. They're monstrous. I mean, I want to put it in perspective that back in 2014, domestically owned companies in the Irish economy gave rise to 1 billion of corporate tax. That's now doubled to 2 billion, which is pretty impressive as a performance for the domestic economy. But there's another 8 billion coming in from multinationals, which just shows how, held aloft we are by international circumstances.
Yeah, sure. And we'll come to that in a moment. But our tax receipts, up nearly 3.5 billion on 2018 for the first 11 months this year?
Yeah, and up 1.4 billion on what the government had actually planned for, which is
anticipated,
it has a certain amount of optimistic assumptions in it as well.
Now, what about this rainy day fund? We've heard a lot about this over the last couple of years from Fine Gael, putting money away for a rainy day and, you know, fears about recession and Trump's trade wars with the EU and with China and Brexit, etc., and how that could affect the economy. Why don't they put this extra loot into this rainy day fund?
Well, just to remind your listeners, when it was initially mooted as an idea in 2016, the government had promised to set aside 1 billion from 2019 on. This was then later revised down to 500 million. And then in the end, we actually didn't put any money in. because of the Brexit risk. So it's been incredibly watered down, and most economists and the Fiscal Advisory Council are advising that the windfall taxes should be put into this fund as a buffer against you know, future downturns or shocks. So at the moment,
a watered down rainy day fund.
A watered down rainy day fund, and at the moment, as
a contradiction in terms. But anyway, Alan, did you buy the whole rainy day fund idea?
Well, I mean, look, the notion of it, or the idea of having it there, makes a lot of sense. But again, I mean, politicians being politicians, there's always the tendency or the risk that they're just going to put their hand in when other issues arise. That, you know, when they see civil servants need a pay rise or someone's going on strike, and, you know, it's just to keep people happy, they chip into it. So, look, I think in fairness to the minister in the budget, I mean, there's very little he could do in terms of give money away, because the Brexit issue is such a big one. It's a big one for us. It's a big one for the EU as well. But you can't be making decisions until you see exactly how things play out. And it's interesting today, we see the central bank, and people be on about the central bank and the mortgage lending rules. Again, you'd have to say, you know, well, it might not suit people in some ways, people trying to get on the ladder in terms of buying a house. The central bank can't afford to be taking risks in terms of Brexit. It could potentially do a lot of damage to the economy. I'm not saying it will. It could potentially do a lot of damage to the economy. But I think, you know, all you can do is at least say we're going to have some money put away if things turn pear-shaped. I'm not totally convinced. I think, as I say, you know, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of promises be made in a lot of areas on the doorsteps when the election does start taking place. Because that's what politicians do. They tend to ignore the advice of whether it be their own government officials or economists or whatever, and just buy themselves votes to get through to the next, you know, get themselves in for another 3 or 4 years. You know?
Just on that point today, Seamus Coffey was at the Oireachtas Committee Budgetary Oversight, and he suggested that some of the excess windfall taxes could be pushed into the MTMA to manage the liquidity of the economy of the state. You can imagine politicians trying to justify that on the doorsteps during the forthcoming election. It would be a difficult sell.
It is difficult. I mean, look, as I said to you, when they go to the doorsteps, the only issues that people are worried about are housing. We see the housing issues is disastrous from every aspect, whether it be social housing or people trying to get on the ladder to get ordinary people in terms of trying to get a mortgage to get a house. My own kids, the same. Two daughters in their 20s are home with us, and no sign of, you know, getting out, because no chance of getting out, really, you know. And the health situation, which is always a problem in terms of, you know, for governments when they come before the electorate, and, you know, there are other issues there. And certainly trying to sell putting money away for a rainy fund, and it's not gonna wash, really, you know.
Alan, should we be worried about the potential for another crash? A lot of people, you know, they worry about the Dublin market and property and the way values have gone and so forth. And then if you look at the on a global scale, we've got Brexit, which you've mentioned. We've got Trump and his trade wars with the EU and with China. We see that Irish whiskey now might be caught up in these tariffs with America. And, you know, there's lots of other stuff bubbling away in Latin America and in Asia, Hong Kong and all of that. It's very unstable. Although, you know, bizarrely, the stock markets have been doing well these last few months. So just help us to try and figure out what might be around the corner for the Irish economy.
Well, I think geopolitically, I think risks are really intensified. I think they are really elevated at this point in time. The most elevated they've been for a number of years, you know. I think the whole Trump Brexit thing are symptomatic, and we've seen this in other countries, Italy as well, where people have had enough and are moving away from globalization back towards nationalism, and what I call the me myself I syndrome. You know, you put yourself first. I don't think that works in any facet of life. I think that only ends up in tears. I think this will end up in tears as well. I mean, I think what you're going to see is, I think you'll eventually see, in terms of stock market, you will see, I think, a bigger crash than you did back in 87. I think when this eventually unravels. Now, I'm not saying it'll unravel tomorrow.
How long?
Well, it could be a few years, because if you go back to the Greenspan era, in he talked about irrational exuberance, and it was another 2 years before the market actually fell. So it could be years, but I just think the way the system is set up, this idea of negative interest rates, central banks pumping money in, not be too sure themselves how to get out of, you know, the whole situation they're in. I just think the way it's gone, it's going to end up with a big sort of explosion. That in itself would be bad for the global economy. I think we're getting through at the moment because I think whether it's pressure from Trump or whatever, the Federal Reserve took a complete U-turn and suddenly decided to cut US interest rates. They have scope to cut rates. The ECB hasn't, other banks haven't, but at least the Fed has scope to cut rates. The fact that monetary policy, you know, rates are going down and down and down, that's fueling the rally on the stock market. It's, you know, just pump that money in and we'll be fine. We'll be fine, yes. It could go on for another few years, but I think at the end of it all, it's just going to end in a sort of big blowout, and that's going to be bad all round.
Oh, gosh, that's a pretty gloomy perspective of things pre-Christmas, Alan.
No, well, I think I've always said this. I think I'll say one thing with the Irish. Ireland is great resilience, and we will bounce back no matter what happens. I think one thing, great traits about Irish people is that it was the Calcutta Tiger era was great. We went through an awful time for a few years. We've come out of it okay. Not everybody is in great shape, but most people are back on their feet. And even in a scenario of a hard Brexit, it may be bad in the short term, but Ireland will bounce back. And even in a situation where the global economy has another serious thud, you know, in the next few years, it'll be bad for a while here. But I'm telling you, I mean, I'm fairly certain that we, as a nation, this great little nation of ours, which has forever punched above its weight, will punch above its weight again.
All right. Well, here's hoping. We'll get you back maybe in a few years' time to see if that's...
Well, I hope I'm wrong. I'm not a bit of Ireland, but I'm in terms of being resilient, but in terms of that the thing doesn't end badly in terms of on a global scenario, you know?
All right. We'll leave it there. We're going to take a short break now. When we return, I'll be talking to Dermot Jewell of the Consumer Association of Ireland about welcome changes to the rules on gift vouchers. Back in a few moments.
You're listening to the Irish Times.
Welcome back. This is Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock. Now, the Consumer Protection Gift Vouchers Bill came into force at the beginning of this week. This means that practically all gift vouchers purchased from here on in will have a lifespan of 5 years. Joining me in studio to discuss how this will work in practice is Dermot Jewell of the Consumer Association of Ireland. Dermot, I read somewhere that you've been fighting this case for 25 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm that long with the Consumers Association. And I remember in my first year there, people ringing up and coming in with complaints and problems where they brought in a gift voucher or a credit note to a store, and they were refused value for it because it had gone out of date. Now, at that stage, the dates were on average 12 months, but over the period of time intervening in the 25 years, that's reduced to a validity of 3 months, sometimes 6 months, but a maximum of 12, which is ludicrous.
Now, this new bill, what will it mean?
Well, it means that that kind of situation won't exist again. You will now have that the value of whatever was paid across the counter to receive a piece of paper in return will stay valued and valid for a period of a minimum of 5 years. If the retailer wants to go beyond that, that's good. That's down to them and their business. But at least you have that protection. It's guaranteed for 5 years.
Right, okay, so good news on this front. I was in the Shelburne Hotel yesterday and I was buying a gift voucher as a Christmas present, and I asked the helpful lady who was providing me with the gift voucher what the expiry period was, and she said 5 years.
That's terrific.
So obviously the training in Shelburne Hotel has worked. Was it sharp practice on the part of retailers to offer periods of only maybe 3 months or 4 months or whatever?
Oh, absolutely. I'm convinced that that was the case. I mean, there will, I suppose I should put it in with the caveat that there are a lot of very good retailers out there who, if you walked in with a piece of paper, whether we were only speaking about it some time ago, if it was in punts or pounds, they gave it the value. They were happy to see a customer come back and they see it as goodwill. But the reality was that most took the opportunity to say that, well, yeah, I know you gave us €100 across the counter 13 months ago at this stage, but there was a 12-month time limit. You didn't use it, you didn't spend it, so you're getting nothing for it. That was, of course, that's sharp practice. That's bad business.
Yeah, and in fact, some of the retailers were taking money off. They would say after 12 months, you lose 10 quid or 50 quid or whatever it might be, and after maybe another 6 months or 12 months, you lose another sum of money.
Yeah, it was just a notional thing for them. I mean, they literally made it up as they went along. Yeah. And that was the problem with it. We always talk about consumer choice. The consumer had no choice whatsoever in this. If you bought one
of
these
things, they had a choice. They could have just handed over cash, I suppose, to the recipient.
No, I couldn't agree
more. If you were given it as a present, you could just...
But I mean, when you took the piece of paper, sure. And it may have been that you brought something back, weren't able to take something at the time that suited you, so you said, fine, yes, I'll take the credit note to the value of whatever it is. Yeah. But if you put it aside, or, which is a big problem, a serious problem with people, that they're forgetting about having these things, which you really, more than ever now, should not do, then it ran into a nil value.
Now, gift vouchers before the date that this was enacted at the beginning of this week, what happens to them? Do the old rules still apply?
Old rules still apply. It wasn't the bill is not retrospective, so you're literally going to have to engage with the retailer and try to ask them to be pragmatic in the sense that, sure, look, there's a new rule here now. Let's meet at least midway. Give me the value of it.
How much are we spending on gift vouchers every year?
Department of Business, Enterprise and Innovation came forward with a figure there a number of weeks ago of 600 million. Mm. But the frightening figure in the background of that was 120 million of that was not redeemed. And when you think what could be done with that amount of money, it's a problem. It's a very real problem. So we've got to emphasise the message. Look, I know we fought to get the 5-year validity, but use these things sooner than later. It's your money. Enjoy it. Don't forget about it. And if you are going to put it away for a coming birthday or an occasion or something, at least stick a note in the diary on the phone or in your diary, whatever means you use to remind yourself that this needs to be used by a sooner date than later.
Sure. Okay. Check all your drawers and check all your coats and pockets just to make sure you don't have any lying around that might be going out of date. Now, will this legislation apply to vouchers that you might buy on Groupon or Pigsback?
Very, very little consideration around so many of those. The same with gift cards. It won't apply to gift cards. It's a problem. The approach with those is different. Cards predominantly do not have an end by date, if you like. What does bring them to an end is that after the 13th month, on month 14, a charge kicks in, which you are advised of when you buy it. But a charge kicks in, which is a monthly charge that depletes the value of the card over a period of time. The element of frustration with the Consumers Association on this one is that they're usually a fixed charge per month. It doesn't matter if the card is purchased for 1,000 euro or 10 euro. It still is depleting at the same amount. I know it's connected to some degree of insurance. I know that, for example, if this business goes out of business, your money's protected. So that's the difference, and that's kind of what you're paying for in the background.
And of course, with Groupon and the like, you're usually paying for a discounted service in the first
place. That's exactly it. So it's not coming up and registering on the system.
Yeah, mind you, I'm not sure if people use Groupon that much
anymore. No, not so much. Not so much.
Yeah, it definitely post the recession.
Even the selling point has been changed by most retailers and the way they do business, whether it be a shopping centre or the famous, you know, the one for all and all the other type of cards that are there.
Yeah. Now, two sides to every story on this. It's good for consumers, obviously, but what about businesses? Because presumably they have to keep this sort of in the back of their minds. They've sold this 100 euro voucher, let's say. It hasn't been cashed in year two. It hasn't been cashed in year three. It hasn't been cashed in year four. But it could be cashed in year five. And they have to be mindful. That money, you know, they took that money a long time ago, but they've still got to provide the service or the value of that.
Absolutely. And I suppose I'll put my hand up and say that we were looking for a 6-year validity on the credit cards at minimum. And the reason for that is that under tax revenue law, you need to maintain records for 6 years anyway. And if you're accruing through a business structure, then you're accruing for what's come in, what's spent and what hasn't been redeemed. So it's really just an accounting and an auditing structure to keep in place. No more than that. So we don't see it necessarily. I mean, it's money paid up front. It can be used over a number of years if necessary. It's just that you give a promise. It's like getting cut notes into your hand. You give a promise that you'll give the value of it in a period of time.
Right. Okay. So happy with this?
Happy enough with it. Yes. It's progress. It's good. Not going to jump.
Will we see a boom in the number of gift vouchers being purchased, do you think?
I don't think we'll see a boom. As I say to you, what worries me a little bit is that somebody will sit back and relax on the 5 years. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but I'm saying you really should think otherwise. Try and use it earlier, sooner than later. businesses are struggling at the best of times. They can go out of business, so use them.
And of course, they go out of business. That's it. It's up in smoke.
Up in smoke.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Dermot Jewell, thank you for joining us. That's it for this week from Inside Business. My thanks to Peter Hamilton, Owen Burke Kennedy, Alan McQuaid and Dermot Jewell. Declan Conlon produced the show with JJ Vernon as sound engineer. Remember, you can get the latest business news straight into your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email at irishtimes.com. And you can also follow the Irish Times business feed on Twitter and Facebook each day. I'm Ciarán Hancock. Until next time, take care.